there are things that you can do within your craft to make money. You don't have to just do whatever gives you money, because at the end of the day, once you've spent your time and your energy there and you're tired now and you're depleted, you've gained nothing. You've gained nothing towards your skill set or towards your craft.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Currently Bossing Podcast, powered by the Boss Up Inc. On this podcast, we discuss all things relating to career, social media, influencer marketing, and what it really takes for you to create your mark in today's digital landscape. I'm your host, Brittany Nicole, founder and CEO of The Boss Up Inc. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Currently Bossing Podcast. I'm your host, Brittany Nicole, founder and CEO of The Boss Up Inc. Today, we're chatting with singer, songwriter, and producer, Tamara Jade. You might know her from her recent time on NBC's The Voice on Team Legend, but we'll talk about that more in a second. Tamara Jade is a classically trained soul artist from the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. Whether she's singing an R&B classic ballad or jazz standard, Tamara's voice is known for its gorgeous, impeccable control and extensive range. She's performed with major artists like Lizzo, the Zac Brown Band, and toured with Corey Henry and the Funk Apostles. In 2020, Tamara became a contestant on season 19 of NBC's The Voice, where her audition garnered over 7 million views. She ended the competition as the top 9 semifinalists. Jade has also been featured in the New York Times, People, Pop Sugar, Billboard, USA Today, and Access Hollywood. Her debut EP, Self Aware, released in October 2019, reached number 7 on the Global Soul chart. With the soulful sound, Tamara's music infuses elements from several genres to create an authentic but familiar sound that inspires others to chase their dreams and live life to its fullest potential, and all to a relatable soundtrack. Tamara, welcome to the show. Well, Tamara, welcome to the show. I feel like this episode is extra special because we both started our journey in New York together.
Literally.
And we've both grown so much. So I'm excited to have you on the show, and I'm excited for everyone to hear like your story and everything that you're doing.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Yes, so I always love to start off with talking about journey. So give us a rundown of your career journey so that we can have some background on you.
Ooh, it's like a winding road, but it absolutely started with music, always started with music and singing. I was just born into a very musical family. My mother went to performing arts school, and then my older brother did, and it's just kind of like we always sang together, and I grew up in church. And then in high school is when I kind of really started studying music more seriously. And so I went to a performing arts high school, Suitland High School in Maryland. And that's where I kind of like really found my tribe of people. I wasn't just like the girl who could sing anymore. It was like everybody was the girl who could sing. And so after that, I went to Oberlin College and Conservatory in Oberlin, Ohio. And that's where I originally came as a conservatory student studying vocal performance, but during my time there, I added on the double degree program. And so I graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Sociology and a Bachelor of Music in Vocal Performance. And a week after graduation, I went to Italy to perform my first international opera. And as soon as the curtain closed, I closed the score and I never sang opera again. And then later that year, I booked a job teaching preschool music, and the day before the job started, I booked another international tour. And this time it was a gospel tour for 3 months in Italy, Germany, and Austria, mostly Germany. That was really, really, really fun, but I really got tired, and it just felt like work. It just didn't feel like peace and joy anymore. And so after that, I decided to take a break. And during that year, I fell into substitute teaching because a family friend was the HR director at like a charter school in DC. And she was like, you need a job, you home from college, what you doing? So I was like, okay. You know, so I ended up substituting for the music teacher. And while I was there, I met another teacher who was like, well, this school is going down. So if you want, There's another program where they'll train you and get certified and you can teach. And it's just like, even if you want to do something else, this is something you can fall back on. So I was like, okay, cool. I ended up applying and I just checked the special education box, like I'll be interested in it, but it wasn't like an intention. But they ended up picking me for it. And so that interview was cool for that teacher job because it was like a speed dating thing where like all of these school principals within the like KIPS Charter School Network in DC were all there interviewing us. And it was like we had like 10 minutes with each of them. And the principal that ended up hiring me, my major selling point for him, which I thought was so weird, was that I had traveled around the world and toured. And even though I really wasn't trying to come there and do music, he just felt like me bringing that like world experience to the classroom in the hood would be beneficial to the kids. So the next 2 years, I taught in DC special education. I loved it. I enjoyed my coworkers. I enjoyed the almost instant gratification that teaching sometimes can give you, like when you see a student make progress at something, or where you just see like the light bulbs turn on. So that was great. But then there came a time where I started to get uncomfortable and I started to feel a little out of place and that something was missing. And that definitely was music. As somebody who had been going so hard after it her whole life, and then to just like not really have it at all. I always had like church jobs and stuff, but I wasn't like doing an artist thing or anything. And so I went to see The Color Purple on Broadway in 2016. And at that show, I just saw myself on the stage for like the first time in a long time. And especially on Broadway, I had had this perception that it was all like, just jazz hands. And I didn't really think that there was room for people who either looked like me, sounded like me, danced like me, any of those things. But I saw it right in front of me. And so I made a decision that day that I was going to move to New York. And so I came back. I didn't renew my contract. I was like, I love y'all so much, but gotta go. Everybody was super supportive, except for my boyfriend at the time. But everybody else was super supportive and really just cheering me on. I had a going away party. And that summer, actually, when I moved, I came first because I had an audition for The Voice. And I got a rejection. And that is how I started in New York City. And so for the last 4 years, I've been living in New York City, grinding it out, started from the bottom. Nobody knew me and was going to open mic nights, doing whatever I could do to get my name out there. And thankfully, in the last 4 years, things have really kicked up. And I'm sure we'll get into some more specific events, but that's kind of the timeline and the winding road of how I got to where I am right now. So.
I feel like when people think about career journey, they think it's just like one linear path, but there's so many other things that brings you to one point. So let's talk about you taking a leap and moving to New York for a little bit. What was that like for you? And I guess kind of like, was it scary? Like, how did you feel initially?
The thing is, I never really liked New York. I liked New York as a place to visit and go back home from, especially like growing up in the DC area, New York is very close. So I've been a bajillion times. And every time I just always thought it was so dirty and stinky, and the people were just always in a rush everywhere. And it was not a place. I just felt like even when I visited, it was like struggle. Like we had to walk everywhere in the cold. And like, I don't know. I never desired to be there. But when I felt the pull to go, I knew I had to. And I think the enthusiasm came along with it. And so when I got there, I was really excited. I was terrified, to be honest with you, because even the apartment situation just kind of happened. I was supposed to only be there for a month, while I got on my feet, and it just kind of ended up working out that it was like, well, if you want to stay. And so, all of that, I think the scariest thing was just like not knowing what I was gonna do. Like, I didn't go there with any job, prospects, with what I thought was a decent amount of money, but $3,500 was not. That went very quickly. Yeah, that was kind of how I leapt. I will say one of the biggest security senses of security or safety nets that I had was that I did have a community of people there. I had a lot of friends when I already moved. You know, girl, somebody was always at the apartment. Like, I knew a lot of people when I moved. So I never really felt lonely in New York City. I never really felt alone. And I mean, I feel like it's so hard to feel alone there because it's so loud. I mean, just people everywhere all the time. I felt isolated, but I never felt alone. There is a big difference because a lot of that is in your mind either way. But I never didn't feel like I had the presence of people around me or the support of people around me. And I do think so, a common myth, which I came there with the expectation that people were going to be mean, was like, I met the most helpful, kind, gracious people I have in my life in New York City.
I always tell people that, and they're like, "Are you sure they were from New York?" And then when I think about it, I'm like, "You know what? I think they did move from somewhere else." But that's besides
Sometimes that's the case.
there, right? But okay, so going throughout your journey in New York, really just like going to open mics and just putting yourself out there for opportunities, did you have a defining moment where it's just like, all right, I need to pick up the pace. I need to be doing more to get in front of the right people?
There was a few moments that I can remember early on. I think there's always, defining moments or turning points, or in acting, you call them beats. It's like the moment where a shift happens. And so I would say the very first thing, I don't even know if you remember this, the singing competition I did when I first got there. I think it was down in the village or something. And it was my very first time doing a pay to play, basically, which sometimes that means you have to pay like an entry fee in order to perform. And then sometimes that means you have to sell a certain amount of tickets, which the latter was my my situation. And I went there, and after before that I had been spinning my wheels. I felt I was going to auditions like every day, nothing was hitting. And I remember praying and saying like, God, show me what I need to do. If I'm doing something wrong, show me, or if I need to course correct, show me, or if I just need to persevere, show me. And I remember I went in there. I had just moved. Nobody knew me. I did not really have that many people in the audience because like the way you win is based on like audience enthusiasm plus judges. So I ended up winning. And which at that time the prize was $200, and Lord knows I needed it. I really needed it. But I won $200. But at that moment, I remembered I didn't come there to audition, I came there to perform. And so it was like that first W I had, like, because New York will beat you up, baby. I mean, from just like the stuff you see in the movies where like a car drives by and splashes you with water, like that stuff is real, like that stuff be happening. So
It
or you drop your breakfast or you spill something on your clothes, like that stuff just happens. And so sometimes it makes you feel like the world is caving in on you. And so it was that was like the first W that made me realize like you're seeking opportunities for people to ask you to perform instead of
Right.
just performing. And so that's where I really started kicking up the open mic nights more. And then another defining moment was I started, seeking more opportunities to perform. I had a friend who was in grad school for directing. And well, at the time, he wasn't a friend. It was like a friend of a friend of a friend that he needs somebody, and don't nobody know you, go do some free stuff. And so he took us out to eat one day, and he asked me, so what you doing with your time during the day? What you, how you, getting acclimated? And I was like, well, I've been handing out flyers for Uber on the street. I've been doing this and doing that. And he's like, why are you doing that? Did you come here to do that? And I was like, because I need money. And he was like, well, there are things that you can do within your craft to make money. You don't have to just do whatever gives you money, because at the end of the day, once you've spent your time and your energy there and you're tired now and you're depleted, you've gained nothing. You've gained nothing towards your skill set or towards your craft. And so I would say those two were like pretty big turning points for what I was doing and how I was moving strategically, and how I was informing the decisions I was making. I am not typically, I'm an extroverted introvert, so I don't enjoy big, large groups of people unless I'm on the stage, because when I'm on the stage, I'm not in the crowd. You know what I mean? So going to open mic nights was actually hard for me because I mean, those are typically places that you go with your friends or you go with a group of people. And at that time, my friends who were there were already there. They didn't need to go to no open mic nights to be, at these random places in the middle of the week. They had to wake up and go to work the next morning. So those were probably really, really defining moments. And then I would say the thing that really was the turning point for me, like starting to work regularly, was the very first show I did, which was the first Noel at the Apollo. I don't know if you remember that, but that was where I really found my people. And And those people ended up being the person, one of the people who wrote that was the music director from The Color Purple that I'd seen, which made me want to move there. So it was all like this full circle moment. And being in that cast of people, like, it connected me to so much greatness. And at the time, some of those people were not booked like they are now. We all were just on one accord wanting to make, you know, our friend's vision. They weren't even my friends at the time. I just auditioned. They became my friends, and we believed in the vision. We wanted to make the vision happen. We believed that we could tell this beautiful Black story in the historic Apollo Theater, and that our people deserved something that was, you know, more elevated than a church play at Christmas time. Yeah. and you saw it, there was major, I mean, I was 5, 6, 7, 8 and every day, baby. We danced. It was real. Yeah. And so from that, I realized the caliber of work that I was capable of. And it was, even though I was scared and nervous and saying all the time, like, I just moved here and, you know, I hope that I can make things work. From that moment, everybody I met was like, you'll be fine, you'll work. And so I had a sense of assurance, like, okay, now persevere. So I would say those were kind of like the three major moments that really shaped my time in New York. And after that, I was focused. I knew how to focus and I knew what I needed to do.
Yeah, focus and intentional, right? Because I feel like once you kind of like find your people and find like the right connections, then you start getting connected to every other thing. So let's talk about networking a little bit, because right now, obviously, like, we're in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. People can't network. And thinking about those maybe like post-college grads or even just people who are trying to build their career in music but can't network in person, like, what is some advice that you have about like navigating that?
I think actually this is a great, great time for especially young people post-grads that age to start showing how they can add value. Yeah. I mean, you and I, for instance, we work together, and there are times I know that I would love to pass some tasks on to some 21-year-olds who have the time to do certain things that just, because after a while, a lack of productivity starts to cost you money when you get into a machine. And I'm kind of like at the early stages of this machine. And while I'm at the studio and while you and your team are working, it's like everything needs to be working at the same time now. Yep. And so I think if young people can show how they can add value, especially to people who are accessible to you at this point, because people are still at home, this is the time to do it, because when things come back up, you might be already part of the team. You know, but it's really important. I just saw something today where he talked about, stop telling people, I just want to serve. I just want to serve you. You know what I mean? Like, whatever you need, because that's not what you want. You want something out of it. You need something out of it. So approaching it more with, what do you need and how can I add value? These are the things, the skill sets that I have, and this is what I have to offer. Is there any way I can help you? And being a go-getter. I mean, like, we was go-getting, baby. There was times where I wanted to sit down, and then I saw that you would come home from work and then work more. And so I'm like, well, she just went to work all day and I've been in here singing, so I guess I could get up and work too. So like, really just like, this is the time, I think, while things are still a little bit quiet and while you have tools like Clubhouse, I literally have been in rooms on the stage with people that I've admired and wanted to work with for years from afar, who under any other circumstance I wouldn't be able to interface with. So I think being clear about what you have to offer and what your skill set is and what you want to learn and what you want to gain, because I'm in a position now where when I'm bringing people onto my team, I'm also asking them, what are your goals? Because I want to make sure that we're aligning, and it's not just, I'm not just hiring you for a service, because then when you get another opportunity that's more along with your goals, you out and I'm back to square one. So I purposefully am looking for people. So if there are people who want to go into, you know, A&R, want to go into being a part of an artist camp, whether that's beauty, creative direction, choreography, all of that, this is the time. And you got to be willing to look at your experience and what you're learning as compensation. That's another thing. I've had people tell me, oh, that's not enough money. And honey, they are sorry now, baby. They wish they didn't tell me no. They're asking, and you know, if you need me, I don't need you.
No, because when I needed you, it was empty.
Yeah.
But that's such an important point, because I feel like oftentimes, like, people show up in DMs. Like, I'm pretty sure you get a bunch of DMs all the time. People show up empty, right? Like, they want to do something, but they're not really talking about what they want to do or talking about the value that they can further add. And so when you're sending pitch emails to people, you have to make sure you're coming correct and it's not any like empty DMs that are going to be overseen. So that's such a valid point, and I feel like it speaks magnitude to how you got to where you are today. Which, let's talk about Lizzo really quickly and the MTV Music Awards. What was that experience like, and how did you even get there? Like, what, talk to us about the whole thing.
It's so crazy because the more I do these interviews and answer these questions, the more I'm like, none of this makes any sense. I could never make sense of any of it. But this really all started with an Instagram post. And this is a testament to stay ready so you ain't got to get ready. I'm gonna write a book with that title one day, because before I get into the details, I will say that I recognized that opportunity when it came, and I knew exactly what I needed to do to snatch it. And that those things are really important. If you are saying that you want certain things, what you really should be focused on is, what do I need to get, learn, understand, do to get there? So that when the opportunity comes, you're not scrambling to figure out what you have to do there, or making costly mistakes and not booking the gig because you're doing stuff wrong. So it started with an Instagram post, very vague. I'll find it one day. Maybe if you want, I can send it to you. But it literally said something like, female singers who can dance needed for potential TV and touring opportunities. Email three videos to XYZ email. And so the first time I saw it, the person who posted it, I follow, and I knew he MD'd for a few people. He was a music director for a few different people. So I was like, okay, that's probably something legit. And it said in the New York area. That's important. And so I figured it's somebody important, but I didn't really give too much thought to it. It was just kind of like, if I get around to it, I'll do it. And then I saw it again, and I was like, okay, it's probably, a thing. And then somebody who dances with her, my friend Shantae, DM'd it to me. She said, you need to do this, in all caps with like eyes. And so I was like, okay, I know what that means. I know that means you can say something, but you can't say it. And so I submitted the videos, and that's another thing. Stay ready so you ain't got to get ready. I always have videos on demand for every possible scenario. Acoustic, full band, you need to see me dance, you need to see whatever you need to see, I got it. And so immediately I went to some videos that had me moving a little bit more, and instantly I got an email back that said, can you please send us your social media? That's another thing, y'all young people, make sure your social media is both clean and a reflection of what you want the world to see. That is your business card. And so after that, I got an email with, it said, learn these three songs, learn the lead for this song, learn the backgrounds for this, and then learn everything for this one. And they all three were her songs. That email came in at midnight, and the audition was 3 p.m. the next day. I was in Maryland. I was in Maryland because I was about to release my EP in October, and this was in August, and I was doing a listening party. And this is the reason why I'm so traumatized with planning events too far in advance, because every time I do, I get an opportunity that's like, I can't turn this down, and end up having to reschedule and all that. So anyway, that's why I was in town, and so I immediately had to make calls the next morning to a whole bunch of people and say, hey, I know I had this plan, but I got to run out of town, and it's big. So I got back to New York around midday, around noon. Got to my apartment, showered, warmed up, practiced. Cause I actually knew most of the songs because I was a fan. I really already knew her music. I really was a fan, and I had spoken years before. I said, I'm gonna sing with that girl, and that girl's gonna be my friend. So 50-50. We ain't reached the other percent. We ain't friends yet, but we did. And so
Manifest.
yes, it's coming. So I'm talking to my best friend Orlando. We're on FaceTime. He's in Tokyo at the time, and he's getting ready for bed while I'm getting ready for this audition. We pray together. He always prays with me, before auditions and stuff. And then my phone screen shut off when we hung up the phone. I was like, that was weird, but whatever. And so like it, but it's not coming back on. Like I thought maybe it died. Like it's just like the screen is not coming on. And so I looked up on my laptop like how to reset iPhone because I didn't have the home button no more. And I'm like, I guess I never reset it. And I'm trying to do all these things. And I guess in the process of me doing it, I sent an SOS message to my parents, to my emergency contacts. But my screen was blank. So I'm getting calls, but I can't answer the phone because the screen isn't armed. And at this point, I have to leave. I'm like, it's time to go. And I look up how to get where I need to go. It was by the water. And so I was like, okay, we good. We already on the west side. Like we can get straight down there and we'll be good. We'll worry about this phone later. I get there, and of course, because one thing about New York City is it's a whole bunch of yous walking around for whatever it is that you do. So this particular time, I walked into the room and I saw all the me's, and we are all friends. So it was like, hey, girl. And so we back there kicking it up, trying to all practice because we all got this music less than 12 hours ago. And then the front desk receptionist comes and he's like, is there a Tamara Singal here? And I'm like, and they all the girls is looking at me like, girl, what you at the FBI looking for you? What's good? And so I'm like, yes, that's me. He's like, this person called and left this number. Can you call them back? And I'm like, oh man, my phone's messed up. Can I use the front desk? And he's like, sure. And I call and it's my friend Daisy. And I say, hey girl, what's up? And she's like, Tamara, we have been all around New York City looking for you. Your phone sent an SOS message to your parents. And I'm like, oh crap. She had been to my apartment looking for me because when your phone sends an SOS message, I guess, thank you, iPhone, for this wonderful feature. It also sends like the last location that you were at. So it was my apartment because that's where the phone started glitching. So they thinking somebody done killed me in the apartment. Like, you know, everybody who has a girl child in New York just is their biggest fear is that we're just gonna get murdered. Every 5 minutes. So that happened. I disarmed them. They were fine. This whole story of how they found me is just ridiculous. But I went back to the group, get back to the thing. The audition was dancing. We had to learn pretty much like the background dances to Juice. It ain't my fault. And do that. And we had to sing at the same time. And one thing I remember about all the auditions that I had done before and did a bad job at, and from doing the first Noel, the choreographer would say, do it full out as you learn it so that you're not like trying to pick up, you know, stay with the pace once it's rehearsal time, you know, just tips on how to be efficient. And so I remembered that. And I employed those techniques in the rehearsal. You know, they break you up, it's a big group. So then they break you up into smaller groups, you know, to get more practice with the mirror to spread out. Every time every group was practicing, whether I was in the group or not, I was off to the side doing it with them. Because it was like, I don't know this perfectly yet, so there's no reason for me to be sitting down and resting at all. This is a couple hours out of my life. I can sleep later tonight and reward myself with pizza if I book this gig. But for right now, there's a mission at hand.
Go time.
And I went in there and did what I had to do. And then right before the end of the audition, they said, one last thing, can you twerk? And I said, can I?
Whenever
And okay. And I was as I was leaving out, I said, my phone is not working right now. I'm going to go to Apple Store right now to see if I can fix it. Please email me because I know like when you're trying to call me. And he said, oh, when we call? I said, yes, when you call, I expect a phone call. God bless. Have a good day. And when he called me 2 days later, he said, you manifested this. This is Jamel McWilliams, the choreographer, creative director. You manifested this. You said, when we call, and you came in there, you did what you had to do, and we knew that you were the perfect person for the job. And so that's how I booked it. And then we had about a week of rehearsal. It was like Monday, we started rehearsals, and then the VMAs were the following Monday. We rehearsed 7 days. There was not one day off, at least 8 hours a day. The last day was probably more than 12. The last day before ended up being like this big old sister circle therapy session because she wanted to hear from every last one of us. She said, how do you feel about how rehearsal went yesterday? And everybody just, she said, you know, the choreographer felt, he said, everybody did the steps, you all nailed the steps, but it just felt like something wasn't there. And we all realized that we were all holding back because we were still holding on to this imposter syndrome that like somebody, either that somebody was going to snatch this opportunity away or that we really didn't deserve it, was some type of fluke, or we got it because of something, you know, because we were big and she was looking for big girls. And she just reassured us in that moment. And she told us, she said, every time I get a big opportunity, including this, I'm always waiting for someone to call me and tell me they picked somebody bigger and I got bumped. And we're like, you think that? You know? And so it was this moment where it wasn't like a celebrity and her employees, her contractors. She it was just like we were sisters. We were all sisters in that moment. And there was not a dry eye in the house, including the random braiders that came to braid our hair after an all call on Instagram. Like just crazy. And then the result was what everybody, you know, sees and is going to see for the rest of time, which was just real synergy and camaraderie and sisterhood and love for ourselves, and a moment that I think all of us developed a freedom that I don't think we had before. I know I didn't. So that was it was really life changing. And it really felt like after that, things just kind of started snowballing. And I was getting more calls because it's like once you start getting big calls, then you've proven that you're capable of big gigs. So now you become in the pool of people that they can call for big gigs.
So as you started, because I really love that you talked about imposter syndrome, and I really love that she checked in with you all mentally, because that's something that is so rare. But I feel like because of everything that's been transpiring in our world in the past few years, like it's like, yeah, you got to check in mentally. I need to make sure that you know that you belong here. So that gig and kind of like having that defining moment, how were you able to, and maybe still working through, just like breaking the bounds of imposter syndrome and making sure that you know and that other people know that they deserve to be in these rooms.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I have mentorship. I think that is the biggest and most important thing, mentorship and support. I have the most supportive ride or die family on earth, and you can't convince me of different. My family are my business partners. Like, I don't make moves without them. And they are always reassuring me that I have everything I need, but not one day goes by that I don't feel like one day somebody's gonna be like, wait a minute, she doesn't know what she's doing for real. She's figuring it out as she goes along. But I have mentors that tell me we are all just figuring this out as we go along, you know? And so really just letting that resonate with me and not just barreling through those truths too, right? The truth is, oh no, I haven't done that before. The truth is, yes, I'm green at this thing, that this new opportunity. But the truth is also that you have everything you need. The truth is also that, you know, those two things can exist. You can be afraid and be fearless at the same time. You know, there comes a point where even if you're afraid, you're gonna fight or flight. There has to be a response, you know? And so I think accepting both truths, you know, not just accepting the realities, but accepting the realities, which is you might not have done this thing before. You know, you might not have sung and danced with this A-lister before, but you sung and danced at the Apollo before, you know, and you've worked with choreographers before, and you know, all the things that you did before prepared you for this. So I think for me, with the whole imposter syndrome, and that's something that I'm gonna continue to try to work through. I don't know that there's gonna come a moment where I feel like, yeah, I got it. But there are moments where I feel like, yeah, I got this. Like, I remember one performance on The Voice, which I'm sure we're about to get to, crazy. It was the only performance where I felt like after that, let's do it again. Like, I did that. I really just did that. Like, you know, and I allowed myself to feel that. I didn't try to stop myself or convince myself that that was an ego and that was arrogant. I applauded myself and I allowed myself to enjoy my own applause, you know? And I think that's important, just as important as checking yourself. Because that's the imposter syndrome, I think, is really sometimes our ego's way of protecting us, you know, our ego's way of trying to keep us humble. And sometimes it's actually not productive. Yeah. So, but humility can also exist with confidence. And so I think accepting the whole truth about yourself, and sometimes the whole truth is that, you know, you ain't where you need to be and you ain't doing what you're supposed to do. I've had to accept that truth. I have to accept that truth every time I go on a food binge. Like, you know, every time I'm not in alignment mentally or physically, I have to be honest with myself. You ain't, nah, this, you're not doing good, you know? So that honesty, I think, is really the key to the whole imposter syndrome. And just knowing that you're always going to feel like something is new, even until you're 8 years old. So.
Well, I think that that's why so many people love you, because you're so transparent about everything and you're so open. And so when you talk about ego and you talk about the fact that, you know, you did audition to be in The Voice on The Voice when you first moved to New York, or that was the reason why
Again in
you're back.
2018 as well, and that time I got all the way to LA for the callbacks and got a no again.
So let's talk about how you had to put your ego to the side, and then it landed you on The Voice, officially on Team Legend, because a lot of people would get those rejections and not use them as redirections, but be really down and depressed and disappointed in themselves so that they won't try again. So let's talk about all.
You know, it's very easy to take rejection personally, and I'm so glad again that in New York City, I was around people who were honest and open and just very unselfish with information. And I remember Miss Bonita Hamilton Caesar, I think her name is. She is one of the hyenas for the past, I think, 13 years or 17 years in The Lion King on Broadway. And one of the things she said was, sometimes no means not right now. And she talked about auditioning multiple times for The Lion King before she got her yes. And then she has been able to put her children through private school, and her children are actors too, and from it. And so I remembered those things, and the very first time that no really hurt, it felt personal because it was like, how dare you? Because the thing is, you're auditioning for producers, so they're not musicians, they are casting you. And so that first realization that it wasn't so much about my voice, which is kind of ironic because the show is called The Voice, but it was a package deal too. Like the singing part really is the easy part of all of this. Like, so I took it. And then when they reached out again in 2018 for this industry audition, this time I felt like I knew a little bit more, but I also felt like I'm not gonna let them put me in a box. Because I had friends who had done the show before, and that was always their advice. Like, don't make them put you in a box because then they're going to make you sing the same kind of stuff all the time. So I went in there this time feeling like I had something to prove and singing stuff that I could sing because I was singing it in the wedding band, but that really wasn't true to me and my artistry. And so I got through the first round, and then I got all the way to LA for the callbacks, and then I didn't get through. And this time I really, me and my family was kind of like, forget it. That's just not for me. Like, okay, it's okay. But what I did do was I said to myself, if they contacted me twice, they'll be back again, And this time I said, if I got a step closer last time, that means next time I'm going to the actual blind audition. And what I did was I started to live my life as if that opportunity was going to knock on my door again at some point. And that meant, because at that point I'd seen the contract already, so I knew that if they did take me, what the stipulations would be, and what my life would be like, because the exposure was the obvious part. I knew I could go on there and win people over, but what would I really want something like that to do for my career? How could something like that function to help me get to the next wherever I wanted to go? And so I was intentional. I said by my 30th birthday, which was October 15, 2019, I have to put out my first project. I have to. That is the deadline. We ain't going into this third trimester of life without it. That's it. And so I was intentional that whole 2019. There were some weekends I would be doing two, three weddings, and then I would get on the mega bus or boat bus and go to Boston to go record. And I thank so I thank God for my tribe. That's another, brother from another mother. But that producer and engineer went to college with my brother, with Tabari. And so this whole community of people pitched in to make this happen for me. And all of the things that I started to do, and all of those jobs, and I started to be more intentional about social media. I started to get books, ebooks, people, I bought, a couple of Britney's ebooks throughout the years because it was like, I realized that people find joy in the things that I know I have to do, but I don't like to do. Graphic design, website building, marketing, social media. And there are things that I enjoy about social media. I enjoy content creation. I don't enjoy the organization, the planning ahead, the strategy of it. I just want to put what I want to put out there, and that's it. Because that's the artist in me, that's the creative in me. And so aligning myself with people who did find joy in those things and knowing that I needed to work towards a life where I could just pay them to do it. And that is what I've been doing. And so I knew they would be back. And this time is so crazy. I said to God, because I had to check my ego, I said to God, I won't take it personal. This is not personal. This is TV casting. They are looking for something, and whatever they were looking for at that time, I didn't have. And so November 2019 is when I got approached this time by one of the Black recruiters who actively does his part to get Black people on that show. That is important. It is important to be on the other side of tables to make decisions. And so he contacted me, and I said, look, this is what it is. I'm on tour now. I don't have time to go to an audition only to be rejected and sitting there all day like, I would love to, but I can't. And so he said, all right, here's what it is. Send me some videos. Send me as many videos as you want. You don't even got to record nothing. We're gonna put a package together for you, and we're gonna make it happen because we do accept video submissions. He said, now they don't like to accept them, but they make exceptions if they want you. Send me a video of why you want to be on the show. And it just so happened that I guess that time I was real bold and free, and I had just done that Lizzo gig, so I was really feeling myself. And I remember saying in an audition tape, I should post that soon. Send me a reminder that I said that. But my audition tape, I remember saying, this is the right time for a person like me to be on a platform like this. And I believed it. I 100% believed it. And so months went by. He said, okay, thank you. Package is cool. They have to actually do the auditions for the next few months, and then I'll circle back in the winter. And I didn't hear from him for a little while. I knew the auditions had ended. I was diligent. I circled back and I said, hey, just, you know, seeing if you got all the materials. Because the thing was, it wasn't like I was like, F them. You know, it was like, right. I wanted to do it. I still wanted to do it. I just wasn't willing to put myself in any uncomfortable position to get there because I wasn't uncomfortable in my life. I wasn't not booking. I wasn't not working. I was happy with my life. So I was like, this can elevate me. But if it's going to at all, like, make me uncomfortable, no, thank you. And so I still was diligent and I still circled back and I still asked, you know, everything cool? Did you get my materials? All right. Just want to make sure. And I went on about my life and it was like March. I had just gotten back from Tokyo. He called me and he said, you're the only one who was doing this video submission, who followed up and did everything that I asked. And you were on top of it more than I was. So I want you to know that I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that you get represented in the best possible way. And that was in March. And I got an email in April that I was invited to the callbacks. Or no, coronavirus in March. So in the same time that they emailed to say, like, we're going to do whatever, they also said it's getting pushed back. I had already had a summer tour book with Lenny Kravitz, with Corey Henry, who was I was singing with at the time we were opening for Lenny Kravitz. So I was kind of like, I mean, I'll come, but I don't know if I'm going to make it. I'm not sure if I'm going to be available. And so I kept getting pushed back. All my stuff was canceled. So finally in June, they said, all right, we're ready. We'll be flying you out in 3 weeks. They had been still going through the process. You have to do psych evaluations. You have to go through a whole lot of things in order to be fit to be on television. You have to have a physical, like, they got to make sure you ain't coming in with, you know, you're not healthy. So it was a long process before even getting to LA in July. And then, I mean, I was scared. I was very scared just for my health. I was terrified because I'm like, you can't control being on a plane with in an enclosed space. Like, and then it's a long flight. I'm across the country. It is 5 hours, like a full 5 hour flight. I'm going to have to take this down to breathe at some point. I'm going to have to take it down to take a sip of water. And like, what if that 10 seconds is the seconds that I breathe, you know? No. And I had to give it to God. And what I said was, my whole family, I talked to everybody, I checked in. I'm like, I'm not going if we don't all agree with this.
Right.
You know, we had a plan, we had a, you know. And so I said, God, I would not be recklessly traveling right now at a time like this. So I need you to cover me. I need you to protect me because you know that my heart is pure. My intentions are pure. And so to my knowledge, I have not contracted coronavirus at any point. That doesn't mean I haven't. Yeah. I don't think I have. And that's kind of how that whole process got started. And since then, my life has been completely turned upside down for the better.
I really like what you said about just like having, you know what, God will put people in your life that will work for you. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to do anything. And he really worked for you in that instance without you even having knowledge that he would. And so I just feel like that's what happens when you're patient, diligent, but also intentional and not also being still, right? Like being still in the opportunity and knowing that God was going to guide you. So what would you say is, or a few things that help you stay grounded as an artist? Because there's so, like, once you get into that limelight, there's so many things that could distract you.
Yeah.
So what things or practices that you have that really keep you, your foundation solid?
First and foremost, living in a state of gratitude, like always being thankful, even when stuff looks bleak, even when I'm complaining, I literally am like, I'm just venting right now. You know, I know things are going to be, I always speak positivity, even when I'm like sad, like even when I'm venting or complaining, I always say, but I know like there's always, I always speak the truth to the illusions that are trying to distract me. I also think that remembering your why. And I think making vision boards and stuff like that is really important to reminding you of your why, because sometimes stuff comes up that seems like an opportunity, but has nothing to do with what you trying to do. You know, so I've had things that seem like they were good for me, but I had to pass on because it didn't have anything to do with the vision that I was trying to accomplish, you know? And so really being clear about why you're doing what you're doing. At the core of me, I am a musician. I eat, sleep, breathe music. I'm to the point now where, you know, 30 years into this, there's certain things that I don't have to work as hard for that to other people seem like just come out of me easily, but I had to train my body and my mind to do that. So really remembering for me, I always ask God for those full circle moments. I always remember moments from my childhood. I remember, you know, the sparks of why I listened to the music that I loved as a child. It's very easy when you start to develop a craft to analyze that craft so much that you forget to consume it and enjoy it. And so I make it a point to consume and enjoy music. Music is my passion and my vocation. So sometimes your vocation gets annoying. And so I have to make sure that I always leave space for music to not be annoying to me or burdensome to me, even when I'm practicing. Okay, when I get something, I move on and I listen to whatever I want to listen to now. That's not me practicing, you know? So really just knowing why you're doing this and connecting. And then I would say the third biggest thing for me is my family and my friends, my tribe. I stay connected to them. I make time to connect. Even if I was in a studio session today and my brother's godmother, she's like an aunt to me. She has been trying to call me and circle with me since I got home. And it's just, I feel like that generation just has an anointing to call at the wrong times. I don't know what it is about
So true.
the 50 and over club crowd. It's like they say, you know what? This must be a bad time. And so
About grandpa all the time.
it's like, man, I really actually would have talked to you right now. But I was intentional that when I got in the car, I knew I had a 30-minute trip. I'm like, okay, Tamara, you can take 30 minutes. You don't have to hold the phone. It's not going to risk your life to talk to her. Call her back. You know, just these are people that literally she was there at the hospital minutes after I was born.
In your corner,
So
yep.
yeah, staying connected to that and just letting them love on you, letting people, everybody knows I love food. They know I love crab legs. They know I love what I love. So let them shower you with love and reaching out for help too. I would say, so those four things, I'm trying to like, I try to be linear in my speaking and thinking. So the fourth thing I would definitely say is asking for help and accepting help. I laid in my mom's bed 2 nights ago and cried. And just let her hold me and console me because I needed it and I ain't got no man. So it's like, you know what? I will take, our moms are happy to baby us for the rest of our lives. They look for opportunities to baby us. So, you know what? I let them sometimes. I let my family, I let my brothers spoil me. I let people love on me. And when I need support, when I just need to, hey, can I come over? Can we get wine and cheese and recharge? I do those things. Like that self-advocacy is important. So that's really kind of those four things I really try to focus on to keep me grounded and keep me sane. And that doesn't mean that I'm confident and smart all the time. I literally lost it this week and was like, I have control of nothing. I have control of nothing. Everything's going wrong. I can't do anything right. I'm failing all of these people that I brought along with me. Everybody's depending on me. I'm failing. I'm a failure, you know? And then you shake it off and you get back, you know, and I talk to my family and they let me vent and then they work through it with me. And then I'm in a position where I elevated very quickly. And in as much as I had infrastructure and as much as I was mentally and emotionally prepared to be on a big platform, I did not have the business infrastructure for where I was going because I didn't have the resources at that time. And so I had to be kind to myself and be gracious and understand that like I'm in a place where I'm forming that now and the people around me are patient. It's okay. They know that you're figuring this out. They want to help you. And so if they're asking you for something, it's because they want to be able to give you what it is that you need, but they're gonna need stuff from you, you know? So yeah, those are the ways I kind of stay grounded for the most part. I'm not always grounded. I'm not, but
It's so important to say that though, because I mean, people looking from the outside in, they always think that, oh, like, how can I get to where she is? But they don't know that you cried 2 days ago, or they don't know that not every day is like that. And so I really feel like it's so important for people like you, who your platform is growing daily, to continue to show that transparency, because that's how you get people to really invest in you. And no matter what you do, like, they convert in other ways. I love that you said that. Speaking of converting and investing in you, let's talk about some projects. Like, what do you have coming down the pipeline? What should we know about?
Okay, well, the next biggest thing, the first biggest thing, I am currently, I have a campaign that I've been running, overseeing, doing all the things, called the Superwoman Campaign, and it is a campaign to just empower women from underrepresented groups to just be fun, fresh, and free, and just be themselves, and to really show that the value of us as women, and trans women, you know, however you identify, if you identify as a woman, is not in only in the fact that like are a woman, like that's not really enough. Yes, anatomically we are strong, we are powerful, we are the givers of life, literally. But to me, what the superpower is that we have the ability to do anything, and some of us pretty much often have to do everything. You know, we have to be the boss, we have to be the CEO, but we also have to be the janitor and the accountant and the graphic designer, and we have to be the mom and the wife and the daughters and the sisters and all of these things. And the auntie, my niece texts me today, auntie, can you come over tonight? I'm like, as soon as I'm done this interview, baby. So, you know, I think sometimes women get those things get overlooked, and I want to show like sometimes there's some unconventional things that we can do too. And I want those to be a part of the conversation as well. So really just highlighting those women, moving into a fitness and nutrition initiative. And again, not just fitness, fitness and nutrition. I'm somebody who recently recognized that I do have food intolerances. I just thought everybody's body reacted the same way when they had milk products. That is not the case. And so recognizing that, recognizing how gluten functions in my body, recognizing what I need to sing properly and all of those things, and making decisions to put things into my body that will help and not hurt, and to just be more disciplined. And so sustainability is another piece of this that I really want to learn more about, so that I can do my part, whatever that part is supposed to be. Because I think, what is it that I think Martin Luther King says, like our rent for our being alive is service, or something like that. Our payment for being alive is our service. And so, making sure that we know that whatever our parts in whatever causes we align ourselves are. So, when it comes to sustainability, I don't really know enough, and I want to know more because I realize that it is affecting us. Climate change, all these things. So, I want to learn more. And as I learn, I want to share that, and I want to elevate some voices that really are super. It's really just, you know, walking in their superpowers. And so that's what we've been doing. Always, always with the music. Always, always. You can listen to my music everywhere that you stream or buy music. I have an EP out. I have some singles out. And for everything else, you can head to www.tamarajademusic.com, TamarajaDe Music. And I am Tamara Jade Music on all social media platforms. I'm always here. I'm always doing something. Yeah, as long as you want to come along for the journey, we'll be here. And there's merch available as well on my website. Superwoman merch available. So if you are a superwoman, you are have super girls in your life, there's some for the superwoman in training. If you are a identify something else and you want to show your support, buy it for somebody. Yes. So support me as many ways as you want, as many ways as you can, and know that you are sowing into good ground, and you are sowing into somebody who is responsible with her platform.
Love it. I am so excited for all the initiatives you have coming up. Everyone, I'm going to have all of Tamara's information down in the show notes so you guys can stay along her journey. And
Yay.
Tamara, it was so good having you on the show. I'm really excited to just be able to see you grow more in your platform and see everything you have coming down the pipeline.
Thank you, girl.
So that is it, and I will talk to you later. If you're not already, be sure to follow us over on Instagram at Currently Bossing and The Boss Up Inc. If you love our podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Your rating helps us to reach other bosses like you who are ready to level up and reach their truest potential. Tune in every Monday for our newest podcast episodes. We'll talk to you then. Bye.